All over the world at this present time, special events in World War II naval history are being marked by 50th anniversaries. This has created memorable interest by the younger generation whose fathers or grandfathers lived through that appalling war, which resulted in the annihilation of almost 60 million people. A war which, by the demonic powers of just one man, Adolf Hitler, plunged the world into a nightmare of terror and misery. The battles listed in the accompanying leaflet cover the first group of actions recorded on audio cassettes taken from the author's present series of lectures on World War II naval history. This audio cassette concerns the events in the Second War relating to the sinking of the German battleship Bismarck. In World War II, as early as the autumn of 1939, the then First Sea Lord Winston Churchill was acutely aware of the threat that Germany's two new battleships, Bismarck and Tirpitz, would impose in the war at sea, especially at that time Bismarck, the mighty Bismarck, the awesome Leviathan of the sea, the German battleship which, once loose upon the waters of the Atlantic Ocean and astride the convoy routes, could paralyze Britain's lifeline of supplies and force the country into surrender. Tirpitz was not yet ready, but Bismarck was nearing completion. It was therefore a race against time to have our own two new battleships, King George V and the Prince of Wales, completed and ready for action before Bismarck made an appearance in the Atlantic to attack our lifeline of convoys. In November 1939, he issued this statement: "At the British Admiralty, we are straining every nerve to complete the battleships King George V and Prince of Wales by the autumn of 1940. This is necessary because the arrival of the great German battleship Bismarck on the oceans before these two British ships are completed would be disastrous in the highest degree, as it can neither be caught or killed, and would therefore range freely throughout the oceans, rupturing all communications." But why was this German battleship so special, so distinctive to cause so much anxiety, so much apprehension to the British Admiralty? Firstly, because she was almost unsinkable by virtue of the fact she had a protective belt of 12-inch thick specially hardened steel around her hull to combat torpedo strikes. She had a cell-like structure of watertight compartments to emphasize her floatability in the event of damage. Her 15-inch gun turrets had a protective armor plating 14 inches thick, and if necessary, this most formidable battleship could travel at 30 knots, or approximately 35 miles an hour. When this fleet flagship of the German Navy left Norway for her projected raids in the Atlantic on that fateful morning of the 21st of May 1941, there began to unfold a week-long drama unique in the history of naval warfare. Early in 1941, Admiral Raeder, Commander-in-Chief of German Naval Command, produced a plan of campaign which he assured Hitler would definitely defeat Britain at sea. It had the code name Rheinabund. The essence of the plan was to sail the battleship Bismarck and the cruiser Prince Eugen from Bergen in Norway, and at the same time sail the two battle cruisers Scharnhorst and Nisenau from Brest in occupied France, with all units aiming for the Atlantic to attack the convoys bringing in precious supplies to Britain. A two-pronged attack, a northern claw and a southern claw. In laying the plan before Hitler, he argued that it was a natural winner whichever way it was played. He maintained that if the British sent their battleships into the Atlantic to hunt for one or the other of his ships, they would have to leave their convoys unprotected, which could offer little or no resistance to the power of his ships. On the other hand, if the British failed to respond to the challenge, the German battle squadron could sink the convoys anyway. How he could have imagined that the Royal Navy might fail to respond is a mystery. But almost from the start, Operation Reinabung received a setback. Firstly, it was discovered that Scharnhorst needed a major refit and would not be ready for sea for some months. Secondly, that with her sister ship Nisno both in dry dock at Brest in occupied France, they were becoming the target for RAF Bomber Command. And so, it was not until the 18th of May, 1941, that Admiral Lutyen took the two ships out of Gdynia to sail up the coast of occupied Norway to Bergen. Through intelligence reports, the Admiralty knew that Bismarck was ready for sea. And when a report came in from secret agents in Sweden that the ships were heading northward, the British began an intensive air search. And on the morning of the 21st of May, Bismarck and Prince Eugen were spotted in Grimstad Fjord, just south of Bergen, topping up with oil fuel before setting forth to break out into the Atlantic. For the British, the big question was, exactly where would the German ships attempt to break out? The Commander-in-Chief of the British fleet, Admiral Sir John Tovey, seemed to have every possible escape route blocked. Based at Scapa Flow were his home fleet units comprising the battleship King George V, the battlecruiser Repulse, and the aircraft carrier Victorious, with a flotilla of destroyers and five cruisers. This covered the area between Scapa and the Faroes. To cover the area between the Faroes and Iceland, he dispatched the 42,000-ton battlecruiser Hood and the brand-new battleship Prince of Wales, which was so new she was still under trials and still had dockyard workmen aboard her. To cover the Denmark Strait between Iceland and Greenland, he sent the cruisers Suffolk and Norfolk. Having made these dispositions, he could only sit back and wait for the Germans' next move, relying on the RAF with the reconnaissance to keep him informed on every movement of the two enemy ships. And then the very worst thing that could have happened, happened. The weather closed down. Violent storms spread across the North Sea, visibility almost nil, and cloud seeding down to sea level. Reconnaissance by the RAF was out of the question. But for the Germans, it was the very chance that Lutyen wanted. It couldn't have come at a better time, and he took full advantage of it. He sailed, heading for the Denmark Strait. For Tovey, it was a time of tortured anxiety, for he was like a man groping in the dark. Had Bismarck sailed? Was she still in one of the fjords? If she had sailed to reach the Atlantic, which of the three routes would she have taken? Then, on the evening of the 22nd of May, a lone pilot from the Royal Navy's reconnaissance squadron braved the foul weather, flew across the North Sea, searched among the fjords of Norway in the rainstorms and the anti-aircraft flak, and brought back the news that the German ships had indeed sailed. The fjords were empty. Confident in his hunch, 2 hours later, Tovey with his ships sailed northwest, heading for the exit from the Denmark Strait. Tovey now had one deadly purpose: find the Bismarck before Bismarck found the convoys. To further implement his forces, he called in the 34,000-ton battleship Rodney further to the south. Also from Gibraltar, the 32,000-ton battleship Renown, and the aircraft carrier Ark Royal, and the cruiser Sheffield. By the morning of the 23rd, all British forces from all parts of the Atlantic were heading in the right direction, on an interception course with the great battleship Bismarck. The actual position now was that if and when Bismarck broke out of the Denmark Strait, the two nearest ships to intercept would be the battlecruiser Hood and the new and unready battleship Prince of Wales. Ironically, of all the ships at sea, these two were the least suited to face up to the power of the Bismarck. Hood was a very old ship, completed in 1918. While in gunpowder, she was similar to Bismarck's 15-inch. Her great weakness lay in the thickness of her deck armour plating, only 4 inches thick against Bismarck's 8 inches. This was her Achilles heel. All through the day and night of the 23rd of May, the weather was foul. Gale winds, heavy rain, which again shut down all reconnaissance from Iceland. And then came worse news for Tubby. He received a report from Iceland that although the open water between Iceland and Greenland in the Denmark Strait was reduced to only 60 miles because of the wide band of floating ice off the coast of Greenland, it was possible that a large ship, with care, might force its way through the ice pack close to the shore and break through the strait without using the open water where the cruisers Suffolk and Norfolk were patrolling. And this is exactly where Bismarck was sailing. It was the ideal escape route. But Tovey had one distinct advantage, radar. Although the Germans had a form of radar, it was far inferior to the British, and they thought that British radar was substandard. But they were entirely wrong, for both Suffolk and Norfolk carried radar with superior technical advantage, although Suffolk's radar could not operate astern. At 1900 that evening, while Suffolk was patrolling in the Denmark Strait, at a brief moment when the visibility suddenly cleared, she sighted the German ships coming up behind her, only 7 miles distant. In fact, point-blank range for Bismarck's guns. Having instantly signalled Norfolk with the news, both cruisers, in desperation, rapidly swung away into the fog cover, barely avoiding the German shells. Then, looping around in a wide circle, they followed the German ships from a distance of 12 miles, tracking by radar. This information was then passed to Admiral Holland in Hood, and speed was increased to intercept Bismarck by the following morning. This report was also given to Admiral Tubby, who was then 600 miles southeast of Bismarck and Prince Eugen. And so, while Bismarck and her consort was heading south, she was unaware that Hood and Prince of Wales were on a course to intercept her, and that battle would be joined by the following morning. All this time, the two British cruisers were following, giving Tovey and Holland the course and speed of the German ships. At 0545 on the morning of the 24th of May, Bismarck and Prince Eugen came into view off Hood's starboard bow, and Admiral Holland ordered Hood, with Prince of Wales following closely into a line ahead position, to steer straight for the enemy. But this reduced their total firepower, for only the two forward turrets of each ship could engage. This was a bad mistake, for with the smoke pouring from Hood's funnels, Captain Leach of Prince of Wales could not clearly see the enemy ships. A further mistake occurred when Holland mistook the leading German ship to be Bismarck and ordered fire from both ships to be concentrated on her. But this, in fact, was Prince Eugen, which left Bismarck with her 15-inch guns unmolested and free to fire as she wished. Both the German ships now concentrated their fire on the hood. I think it's worth mentioning the enormous firepower of these two ships, both firing all their heavy guns as broadsides. Bismarck with 8 15-inch and 12 6-inch, and Prince Eugen with 8 8-inch. Neither of the two British ships could fire broadsides, for they were coming line ahead. Holland now realized his mistake and signaled Leach and Prince of Wales to shift target to Bismarck. But Leach, having realized the error that had been made, had, a moment earlier, already shifted his target, firing onto Bismarck. Bismarck's third salvo exploded on Hood's boat deck, setting fire to ammunition. Realizing that in this line-ahead position, neither of his ships could use their after turrets, and that they were in battle with only half their firepower, Holland signaled Prince of Wales to turn to port to fire broadsides. But it was too late. As they began to turn, the worst happened. Bismarck, from a distance of 14 miles, discharged her fourth and fifth salvos. These 15-inch shells took the course of a parabolic arc and fell from the sky onto the weakest part of Hood's armor, the 4-inch deck plating. They penetrated, reached the magazine below, and detonated 100 tons of ammunition. The result was an orange-white fireball 1,000 feet high. At one moment, the mighty Hood of 42,000 tons was there, a fortress bristling with firepower, slowly turning to allow all her 8 15-inch guns to fire on the enemy. The next, in one mighty eruption, she was gone, leaving nothing except the cindered bodies of 1,500 men in a vast widening pool of stinking, bubbling fuel oil, while debris of white-hot metal fell from the skies into the ice-cold waters of the Atlantic. The time was 0600. Only three survivors were found clinging to pieces of wreckage in a great lake of oil. Following so closely, Prince of Wales had to swerve violently to avoid the wreckage. For the Germans, it was their greatest moment. For the British, their bitterest defeat. For a brief moment, British and German crews stared in shocked silence. It was unbelievable. This now left only Prince of Wales, a brand new ship with an untrained crew, with guns that had never been fired in battle, unqualified, inexperienced young men, some of whom had never been to sea, dockyard workmen still aboard, facing the most powerful ship in the German Navy. They did the best they could with all the strength they had. They had to stay alive. And despite faults which developed, three of their 40-inch shells hit Bismarck. But Prince of Wales was in trouble. Technical faults began to develop in the gun turrets. Barrels went temporarily out of action. Turrets jammed. It became evident that the ship had been sent into action prematurely, without sufficient trials. Skilled workmen from the gun factory were still aboard, helping to deal with the constant breakdowns. Both German ships now concentrated their fire on Prince of Wales, and she received heavy damage from 4 15-inch shells and 3 6-inch. One of these 15-inch shells hit the bridge without exploding and killed everyone there except Captain Leach and the signalman. In desperation, Prince of Wales made a smokescreen, turned away, and withdrew rapidly. One mystery remains to this day. Why the German, Admiral Lutyen, did not pursue Prince of Wales and utterly destroy her also? The ship was at his mercy. But the fact remains he did not. And apparently, a violent argument arose between Admiral Lutyen and the captain, Captain Lindemann, over the issue. So, Bismarck, with Prince Eugen in company, continued her course into the Atlantic. But ironically, the whole course of the great Rheinabund venture was dramatically changing. Two of the three shells that had hit Bismarck made a contribution to her eventual destruction. One shell had hit a boiler room, flooding it, dropping her speed to 28 knots, and the other hit a forward oil tank, making 1,000 tons of oil fuel inaccessible and leaving a visible trail of oil behind her. Please turn this audio cassette over to the beginning of side 2.